What's that saying from the show that we used to say? Never give up, never surrender.
Oh, shut up. I won't say that line one more time. I won't say it again.
Trevor, how have I never seen this movie before?
I sent you the review beforehand of Derek, previous guest of the show. Derek, his review of this when we first saw it a couple of years ago was, I can't believe Trevor has never seen this movie before.
So because, you've never seen this movie until, what, post-COVID?
I mean, kind of in the middle of COVID, early 2022, January 2022. So yeah, I mean, it's shocking because this movie says Trevor all over it. Does it not?
I suppose. I mean, what are the characteristics of a Trevor movie? Because, I mean, I know you like gimmick movies. Would you consider this a gimmick movie?
No. When I say gimmick movie, because I just saw Late Night with the Devil, that movie, the production of it and the presentation of it is as if you're watching the live show. You're watching the late night show that they're presenting. That's the
I'm
gimmick.
Aware. I've seen
okay.
the film.
Right. A gimmick movie is like a found footage movie. Missing yeah. is a gimmick movie. Searching is a gimmick movie. Things like that, where it's a gimmick. And more so the gimmick in production. I do like some gimmicks in stories, but I like when there's a gimmick in the production of it. This is not a gimmick movie. This is just a really, really well done, I hesitate to say parody, but it's a, and I also kind of hesitate to say satire. It is kind of satirical, but it's a love letter to Star Trek. And not just Star Trek, the fandom around Star Trek.
It's more of a satire than a parody. I think parody, sure. I hate to say it, but it's almost demeaning. Like, when I think of a parody
Agreed.
Movie, especially these days, you think of, like, a superhero movie or epic movie or disaster movie or things like that. I definitely see a satire because it's smart about it. It's very, it's not just making stupid jokes. It's not just, you know,
no.
putting on the Star Trek costumes and being doofuses about it. This is, like you said, a love letter, an acknowledgement, an homage. But outside of that, it's a standalone film that if you're just aware that Star Trek exists, if you're aware that there are fandoms, that there's Comic-Con, that there's, you know, Star Trek conventions,
right,
then you can appreciate this movie and some of the fun that it's kind of having, not at that expense of those people, but
no.
You know, alongside those people
and alongside those
is we're reviewing Galaxy Quest, by the way. I'm AJ. Yeah. That's Trevor. Happy 25th anniversary to Galaxy Quest this December.
You are my crewman number 6 to my captain.
I'm better at that than, what was Sam Rockwell's character? Is it just Guy? I'm rather
yeah,
be that
crewman
than
number
guy.
6. That's what I'm saying.
Your oh, crewman God.
Number is a guy. You're Guy.
Wait, so what's no, my last name?
You have a last name.
Okay, well, no one knows it because no one ever asked about it because I'm dead by the time anyone needs to know about it.
To answer a couple of questions on this, you said a lot about how this is not a parody because it's demeaning. This is a big favorite among the Star Trek fans, like Trekkies. Trekkies love mm-hmm. this movie. I'm not a Trekkie, and I know you're not a Trekkie. We'll talk our history with Star Trek in a bit, but I know that this is very beloved by many Star Trek fans because the writers and the production team clearly like Star Trek, and they clearly show that it's a celebration of it because the fans... that they're showing, like Justin Long's character and his whole thing, they are, I think, shown positively. If anything, it's making fun of the egos that go along with the actors. But it doesn't even make fun of it too much because it celebrates it in a way because it means so much to so many people. This movie works for me. It's because it's campy, it's goofy, the effects are silly, yet it's a tight script, it's a fun concept, and... it has a soft sci-fi element where it's not crazy lore or anything. It's just focusing on the story and the characters, and it's filled with great setups and payoffs, and you can just smile through this entire movie. It's charming. It wins you over. If it doesn't win you over in the first half, it'll win you over by the end of it, I think.
Yeah, no, I entirely agree.
I'm glad you liked it. I mean, I'd be sad if you didn't like it.
Were you nervous?
I don't know anyone that dislikes this movie. I'm serious. Like, I talked to a lot of people that have seen it. They're like, yeah, it's great. Of different people that usually would hate this kind of thing, or people that hate Star Trek, people that love Star Trek, everyone likes this movie.
So I had never seen it, but I had obviously heard Never Give Up, Never Surrender. I had heard about, like, I think Never Surrender is the name of the documentary. Like, I know they made a documentary about this movie. So I'm not going to push too hard. Don't worry. I never thought of this in the realm of a kid's movie. And I know we've had this discussion a lot. I'm not here to rehash it. I think maybe halfway through the movie, I might have pushed back a little bit more. But having seen the full movie and read a little bit more about the production and the reception at the time, I think if I saw this as a kid, first off, I think I would have loved this movie. I think if I saw this when I was like 8, 9, 10, 11, this would be a really high up there movie for me, maybe in the same way as something like Zathura. And then on top of that, when it comes specifically to the kids movie side of things, I was reading a couple snippets of reviews, and Amy Tobin of The Village Voice didn't love the movie, but she did say that the many 8 to 11 year olds in the audience seemed completely enthralled. And so I think that this is one of those situations where, even if it isn't necessarily a quote unquote made for children, made for kids, one of those kinds of movies, this is a movie that kids obviously really, really responded to. But also, not that many in my circle. Like, you didn't see this as a kid. I didn't see this as a kid. I don't know a lot of people who saw and loved this movie. We might have missed the mark. You know, maybe if we look at some people born in the 80s, we'd have a different story. But I don't know anyone who's seen this movie.
Why I think this is a great choice for this show, not only is it its 25th anniversary, I think I teased last episode, this movie came out in December. We're not going to do this as a Christmas episode, so I just wanted to do it this year. 25th anniversary sounds good. I mean, we hope to be doing the show in 5 years for a 30th, but, you know, who knows? This is a movie that parents who watched either The Next Generation or the 60s would bring their kids to see. And they would, because they love Star Trek, they showed kids Star Trek, they would love to show them. And Star Trek is something that had both Next Generation and the original series. I think I might have said the original trilogy by mistake. This is something that was shown endlessly on reruns. And in the movie, they do a good job of showing the different ages of fans. At one point, Jason Nesmith, Tim Allen's character, is talking to a kid at the fan, and he's getting really involved with him. So you can see that kids are watching the Galaxy Quest show, just like kids are watching Star Trek, even though in the movie, Galaxy Quest has been off the air for 18 years. So Star Trek is something that transcends something like, I don't know, certain shows that might have been on when our parents were growing up that might not hold up super well, right? Like, you could see some old sitcoms like Cheers. I don't think Cheers really gained the following around our age as something like Friends is doing right now. Some TV shows, they just don't age well, or they don't gain the following. But Star Trek, I feel like, has gained the following throughout the ages as they're still making new shows now.
That's what I was going to say, is there's an abundance of Star Trek content, whether it be the movies that have been continuously going. And of course, we have the J.J. Abrams reboot in 2009, I think it was. And then the movies that have followed that. You've got Paramount Plus TV shows. It's a never ending. I mean, I don't want to say black hole, no pun intended, of content that you can get into with Star Trek. Do you want to talk about experience with Star Trek now, or do you want to save that?
Yeah, let's talk about it now. I think it's
I have no experience with Star Trek. The first time I started the mentions of Star Trek seriously outside of like, oh, Star Trek, yeah, it's just that space show. You're gonna hate me for it. Was The Big Bang Theory. You know, that's when I started hearing about how obsessed they were with, you know, Spock and Kirk and Picard and Wesley Crusher, who is Will Wheaton from Stand By Me. So, you know, them coming on, them guesting, them talking about it, I have a good amount. Like, I know what a Romulan is because of The Big Bang Theory. But that came out in, I think, 2007 or 8 is when that show came out. Star Trek 2009 came out, and I saw that in high school. And I've rewatched that a couple of times. It's never really been like I'm going to watch this all the time, rewatchable. It's a fucking good movie. The 2009 Star Trek is really, really good. J.J. Abrams did an incredible job with it. And then I watched Star Trek Into Darkness. I never saw Beyond, but the two feature films from Star Trek that I've seen, I have liked quite a bit. But because there's, you know, the original series, and then there's The Next Generation, and then there's 10 movies after that, and then there's this new generation of movies, and then there's multiple shows after all that, I never went back and watched it, because at that point I had had enough fandoms that I was, you know, both historically and concurrently involved in. That's kind of my experience. I know about it, but outside of the movies that I've watched and I've really, really enjoyed, I've never really been a Trekkie person. Just a Trekkie. It's not a Trekkie person. That's redundant. I've never been a Trekkie.
Okay. Well, I have two friends growing up that were big into Star Trek, I'd say. They were like the two main ones into Star Trek. And I saw a few episodes of each of, I've seen some of the original series and some of the Next Generation. I've liked everything I've seen, to be honest, from those. I think I prefer the Next Generation. I think a lot of the content from that spoke to me a little bit more. And also it's a little higher budget because it's more recent. And I can only tolerate so much William Shatner. But outside of that, I saw the first Star Trek from 2009, the movie, with my friend. We watched it together because Star Trek Beyond was coming out. He liked the first Star Trek movie. I thought it was pretty good. I didn't love it, but I liked it. He hates Into Darkness, and we watched a review of it. He's like, I don't want to watch this. So we watched a review of it, basically going through it. So I still haven't actually seen Into Darkness, but the review was making some compelling points. I'm like, all right, whatever. I guess I don't have to see it, even though I probably should and make my own opinion. But he was like, I refuse to watch Into Darkness. And we were seeing Beyond like that day or something, or the next day. And we were kind of watching them. And then we saw Beyond, and we saw it with my two friends at like Star Trek, and we all loved it. We all had a great time. Beyond, I think, is the best one.
You didn't even see the second one.
Really good. Yeah, I know. I didn't see the second one, but I liked it better than 2009.
Was that Justin Lin?
Yes. Fast, Too Furious.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he made that one, but the Star Trek, The Fast and the Furious. It was really good, Beyond. I'm sad they didn't make more because it was really compelling. I was always a Star Wars kid. Based, you know, the things I saw were just, you know, they were Star Wars stuff. The prequel trilogy and the original trilogy and the video games, and not even that my parents were into it. I just ended up watching it. And I saw Spaceballs, you know, who knows how many times, but never saw Galaxy Quest. I think this is the, what Spaceballs was for Star Wars, Galaxy Quest is for Star Trek and Star Trek fans. But anyone can enjoy either of those films, obviously.
Well, actually, no. I would say that Spaceballs is a parody. I think Galaxy Quest is a satire. You know, you're not gonna,
100%. I agree.
There's no Pizza the Hut equivalent in
No. Spaceballs is 100% a parody. A good one, though. And I still think I don't think it shows a good amount of love to Star Wars. But it's a fantastic movie. I mean, I love Spaceballs. You know, not going to complain.
I saw clips of it when I didn't really get what parodies were. And also it was old. And I was like, this movie looks stupid. I don't want to watch it. So
Seen Spaceballs.
I've never seen Spaceballs.
I don't think you'd like it. I don't think it's for you, to be honest. Yeah. At this point.
Probably not.
But if you grew up with it, you'd love it. What else do you want to talk about? The history of this. It did decently at the box office and everything. But we talked about the reception of it was really good, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, the reception overall was very good. And I think as time has gone on, it is still considered as aging well. Because I watched this movie now, and I'm like, this is just so, like, it's just so good. It just ages flawlessly.
Yeah. You know, Trevor, I'm glad you asked that, because I've thought of, just if I can get, I'll take a huge step back into about with this podcast. Sure. And just, I've been thinking about, you know, how much can I remove myself from this show? And that every time I recommend a movie that we should watch, I bring such emotional weight to a movie like Punks, like Kangaroo Jack. And I found that it is a little bit more difficult for me to really get behind some of the movies that you've chosen. And I don't know, specifically the ones that I haven't seen yet. Now, obviously, if you propose, like, you know, you propose The Pacifier, I like rewatching The Pacifier, even though I don't think it's a good movie. I'm talking about the movies like James and the Giant Peach or The Road to El Dorado that, like, you recommended, and I was like, either I don't like it or it's fine or it's okay, and I'm just like, Does Trevor just not choose movies for me, or am I just kind of close-minded towards movies from that point, kind of proving a point that you've been trying to make a lot on this podcast, where it's like, regardless of whether or not you're an old kids movies fan, if you go back and watch this movie, you're not going to like it. And I
think, to say one thing really quickly, I think that we review re-review movies, and we look at movies a little bit different than a lot of other people would review movies, because we do take into account a nostalgic factor for it. And we also think that it is important, like, if you like something, even if it's objectively bad, it's okay.
Yeah, but you've also raised a lot of really good points. You were like, if you saw Punks for the first time now, as a fan of the old kids movies, would you like it? If you watched The Shrunken City for the first time, if you watched Three Ninjas for the first time at age 29, would you like it as much or close to as much as you do because you saw it as a kid? I think with the exception of The Prince of Egypt, I honestly can't think of a movie that you've recommended that I hadn't seen before that I was like, this is a really, really good movie. But I'm glad you recommended this one because it proves that, like, no, there are still movies that now granted this, again, barely fits into the kids movie mold. I think that if an adult sees this proof with you the first time you watch it, you can like it a lot. But I'm glad that I'm like proving the point that there are still movies that I have not seen from this time period that I can go back, watch for the first time as an adult, and be like, I bet if I saw this at age 10, I would have fucking loved this shit. And I did love this, but I would think I would have loved it even more if the first time I saw it was, you know, the same time that I saw Zathura, for example.
Galaxy Quest, you're saying?
Yes.
Well, I think this is also just a better quality film because this has a lot of aspects that some of our favorites, like a Three Ninjas, a Shrunken City, well, the Shrunken City's for you, a Pacifier, some of the movies that we watch just because that's what was kind of getting made versus like really quality films. And I say there's two words I call certain films, and I use to describe certain films, and it's because of certain qualities, and it's perfect movie. And it doesn't mean it's the best movie in the world. It doesn't mean there could be no improvements, but I think this is a perfect movie. And a perfect movie to me is something where all of the elements click together in harmony. Everything is going well. Everything is perfectly in sync. It's all working together. The acting is good. The directing is good. The script is tight, like as tight as it can be, as perfect as it can be. It's funny or emotional, whatever it needs to be. The cinematography is good. And the biggest thing is the tone and what you're seeing is fitting. And I think there's a specific quality to this movie that you're seeing, like the way that they're talking, the way that they're acting, the way this movie is shot, it feels like you're watching an episode of Star Trek. Like, it feels like this is something that was on TV, an episode of Star Trek. Just the tone of it all. Despite that there's moments of seriousness. But when they're on the ship, I'm like watching an episode. I'm watching a Star Trek movie.
Yeah, or, I mean, from my perspective, it reminded me a lot of, like, Power Rangers in Space, which I'm sure took a lot about power, it took a lot from Star Trek.
Yeah, so that's some positive things about this movie, and I'm excited to try and recommend things that you like, because I know I can recommend more things you like. I knew this one, it has a higher, you know, threshold of quality than some of the other films we're going to watch, but yeah. What now? You want to get into the film?
Let's do it.
All right. This is Galaxy Quest.
In the far reaches of the galaxy, a civilization is under siege.
We are all that is left.
They've searched the universe for a leader.
Stay tuned for scenes from next week's Galaxy Quest.
What they got?
Never give up. And never surrender.
We're struggling TV actors.
You are our last hope.
And they're about to put on a command performance. 8 million light years away.
We are actors, not astronauts.
You are our protectors.
Acting like heroes.
The whole thing was just a misunderstanding.
May not be enough. DreamWorks Pictures presents Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, Galaxy Quest.
You're just gonna have to kill it.
Well, go for the mouth, the throat, his vulnerable spots.
It's a rock, it doesn't have any vulnerable spots.
Do you want to kick us off on some general things you enjoyed for the first time of watching Galaxy Quest?
Well, I think the concept is really rich, and what I think, we talked about this a little bit already, but what works really well about it is I think, you know, sometimes to his detriment, I think that there are things that you would really appreciate and really value, and the little Easter eggs, the tonal things, whatever, that you'd appreciate if you could be one of the, if you were one of those people who went to the Galaxy Quest conventions. Like in episode 9, when you said this line, did you actually mean, like, what did that mean? Like, I feel like the big Trekkies probably love this a lot. I'm going to speculate that probably love this a lot more than the average Joe. And I do think in a way that that works in some ways against it. But I also think the concept of this movie works really well in the sense that, again, you don't need to be a huge Trekkie to get a lot out of this movie and to appreciate this movie. And just this idea, it's a really, I feel like this movie could also be made today. And it's really rare where a movie can be like, this is a 90s movie, but it's also like this self-aware satire that's being made in like the late 2020s, late 2010s, early 2020s, where it's a very popular show and they're actually called in to do the thing that they were portraying on the show. Like, I don't think this movie would be made in like 2011, but I could, if someone said this movie's being made this year as like an A24 movie or something like that, like, I'd believe that. And I think the concept just in general is really cool.
It's such a good concept. Not only is it a good concept, it's executed exactly as you would hope, based on, like, you're hearing this. If someone pitched you this concept, you kind of have an idea of what you would want, and it does that. It executes it perfectly, and it doesn't go too crazy. It doesn't leave the realm of believability. When you're making a science fiction comedy, you have to be careful because the suspension of disbelief is a thin line to drive around. And with this, even moments when you're like, that's ridiculous, it doesn't really matter because it's all fairly consistent. Like, this is all stuff that would happen on the show, so it works. Like, oh, they're breathing on a planet. That, fine. Everyone looks like a human. Fine, because that's how it is on the show.
Well, that they do a good job of explaining, or at least in the Star Trek show. But like the other aliens, the mathematicians, they've got their what are they called again?
The Thermians, or
The Thermians.
Small ones.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, the Thermians.
No, the Thermians. They have disguises that they can use to dress up like humans.
Oh yeah, they have that. Actually, I even want to delve a little deeper on why the execution for this concept is perfect. So people mistake the cast of Star Trek as like real documentaries. They call the show historical documents. That's fun. I like that. It's you understand it immediately. Like, oh, okay, they just assume that this stuff actually happened or happens. They said, we designed this ship so that you can use it exactly how you did on the show. So we can already believe that whatever they're doing, we believe that they can do it. The computer is basically voice command. Fine. The driving, it is really easy. You kind of point and click and drive it. He's like, oh, I did all these motions. It's exactly how I felt it.
The scene where he's pulling out of the parking spot or the dock.
Fantastic. We get to see what the Thermians look like, but they don't do it too much. They're like, we're going to be humanoid. We have this cloaking thing. And a lot of it is similar to what it's like in the actual Star Trek show. So it's familiar to the viewers as well. Like, not picture perfect, but even the way that Tim Allen acts is very William Shatner. It's very Captain Kirk, like sitting on the chair, his like head tilt and putting like the fist on his thinking pose. That's very William Shatner as Captain Kirk.
But then on top of that, Tim Allen is being Tim Allen with his line delivery, with his, what am I doing? I didn't mean to do the Michael McKean, the you know, hey, what's going on here? Like, just the frustrated Tim Allen levels of things that we get. And I think this is a very good performance from Tim.
Oh, yeah. Despite all the kind of weirdness, Tim Allen in the deep end, he's gone on. I think we can at least both appreciate the movies that we select him for. He's so good in. Like, he is so good in this movie. Everyone's really good in this movie. Everyone is perfectly cast. Like, Alan Rickman as the British stage actor that's forced to do this stupid alien role, and that's all he's ever going to be known for. He can't get another job. It's amazing.
Yeah, let's talk Rickman for a second, because I had him down as a highlight. I thought that he was hysterical. And just when an actor passes, you get frustrated because you can never see anything new that they're going to do. But this idea of rediscovering what they've done that you haven't seen yet, this just showed me a whole new side of Alan Rickman. I've never seen Alan Rickman be so funny before, to my knowledge, like, because he was in Love Actually, but he wasn't really funny in Love Actually, even though that movie's kind of a comedy. He's very funny in this movie. The frustration he has over the line delivery, he's kind of like Squidward in a way, like, I really don't want to be here kind of energy. But I really love how he turns his character around, how he empathizes with people towards the end of the movie. I love his banter with his other castmates. I love him, like, leaving, and he's like, you can't say anything that's going to make me leave. And Tim Allen says, you know, the show must go on or something like that. And he's like, yes. Damn you. And he goes back. And that was great.
And I love the subtle nods at Taggart always getting all of the credit, Jason Nesmith always getting all of the credit, and the joke at the end where he walks in, he saves all the Thermians from getting suffocated. And they're like, he saved us. He has like the, are you not entertained? The shrug, like, ah, oh, yes, I saved you. Yeah. Commander Taggart has saved us. And his his expression just goes straight to like misery and chuckles. I loved him in this movie. And the meltdown scene is just one of my favorites in the movie.
Which meltdown?
He's having, in the beginning, he's having the meltdowns. Like, I played Richard III.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I was an actor. I was a him.
Am I too late for Alex Dane? Is that his name?
I don't know.
I think that's his name. Alexander Dane. Yes, Sir Alexander Dane. Am I too late for his panic attack? Throws things. Nope, not the music. I also want to give a slight nod because it feels like very much of its time of what this show would be. It's very spacey. It's very retro spacey and heroic. And I think the theme is really good, especially when they're showing like the TV show, like the introduction to the show, the Galaxy Quest missions or whatever. It's pretty fantastic. I love the music. Another big general.
I thought the music was kind of almost like stocky, like stock music. But what I liked about it is that when they showed it at the beginning, it was very clear that it was like,
yes,
TV quality music. I'm conflicted about how I feel with them integrating that as part of the score. I wish that they had like a grander score, because that to me felt more parody than satire.
See, you're talking about complaining that this is stock music when we'll watch Spy Music Intensifies. We'll watch something with that, or Action Music Intensifies, and be like, oh, I reached out to the composer. I asked for this score. I listen to it all the time when I'm working out.
Leave John Coda out of this. Also, I don't listen
to movie
score.
I didn't mention names. I didn't name names.
I don't listen to movie score when I work out, okay? That's not I listen to it when I study and write things.
I listen to scores when I work out.
Really?
Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes.
Like what? I just can't imagine lifting to time.
Well, I don't really lift, but when I'm running, sometimes I'll like, if depending on the mood, I'll listen to like the Pirates of the Caribbean or more epic scores, sweeping scores.
Oh, you know what I did actually one time? I needed like some energy to get me through like the last like 4 minutes of my Stairmaster one day, and I turned on King of Pride Rock, and that shit got me to the end. That was good.
That gets you there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whatever gets you there. Another sort of general I want to say, aside from the music, I think is, I don't think there's any fat here. When I say the script is tight, I mean every single line and every single thing that happens on screen I think is worth paying attention to. I was even noticing, because I've seen this movie many times since I first seen it now, and I was just spending time watching like Sam Rockwell's character, who's great in this movie. And I'm watching him, and he's just doing like the funniest shit in the background, and he's acting like himself in this whole, not himself, but the character he's playing. He's acting like this fan who is just totally out of his element. When he has a gun at one point, he's spinning around, flailing the gun like crazy. Like, oh, I don't know what's going on. When they're getting food by the aliens, he's like asking to pour more booze into like the blue booze into the cup because he tried the noodle thing and he was choking on it earlier. So watching just different characters, like, there's just no fat on the screen and in the script. A lot of things that are said early on, there's setups, there's payoffs. There's tons of setups and payoffs. Like, my favorite setup and payoff is the line that Alan Rickman character says, because he sets up this so much that he hates this line. He hates saying this line, And then, like, that character that's dying, the character that really looks up to him, he says it, and he actually means it. And it's amazing. And I can't help but just smirk and smile because it's movie making. It's movies. It's great. It's magic.
It's great. When you said there's no fat on this movie, I thought you were saying, like, it's lean and it's really efficient. And I was going to say something
yes,
like,
that too.
Show this movie to Martin Scorsese and show him that you can make a good, really, really awesome movie in an hour and 42 minutes with credits. My God. I mean,
no, come on. I think some movies can be longer, but this one, when this movie's satirical of sci-fi TV shows, those shows have no fat because there's no time. They have to be a certain time so that they can hit their marks for commercials. They can fit in a TV slot. And this movie feels like it fits in a TV slot.
It does. You kind of expect commercial to show up. But
yeah,
something that
in some ways
I think earlier I said I could totally see this movie like having been made in like 2023. I think it would have been like a 2-hour and 10-minute movie if they made it today.
Yeah, they would have added too much stuff. They probably would have added like a 20 minutes in the beginning on the show where it would be the last episode of the show, and when it got canceled, cut to 20 years later.
But I think this was such an appropriate structure, runtime. You know, they would have had, you know, Tim Allen go back up and down one more time just to like realize what he was doing, and then had everybody come back with him. They would have had a situation, you know, where it's like maybe like the Squid Game episode 2 where they all left and they were like, ah, maybe we should go back. And then they'll go, like, they would do something like
they
that.
They would have come back to Earth again. Like, everyone would
exactly.
have come back to Earth.
Like, we don't need that shit. Like, this just launch them into space. They're there. He has one realization. I love it. It's nice. It's cool. And we're out of there. Popcorn bucket finish. Soda empty. An hour and 38 minutes before credits. It's great. It's wonderful.
And another thing with this no fat, you have an opportunity, like I said, you could have done going back in time, or like at the beginning of the movie, you go, you have like the last episode or whatever. But we know we don't need that because throughout the movie, we understand all of their relationships. We understand what happened during the show. We understand all of these characters and who they were and who they are today. We get that just by how they interact in little lines as they're doing things. It's really efficient writing, and it's really efficient how they write this movie and how the movie moves. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes sense.
I like how they insert, like, walk and talk. The classic Aaron Sorkin walk and talk, but this is like doing things and talking, or just giving you information.
But what other generals do you have?
I like the set design. And I think this shows, again, just how much of a love they have for Star Trek is all of the sets. It really does feel like Star Trek. It's not exactly Star Trek. They're not wearing the exact same uniforms. The aliens don't look exactly how they do. The fans don't look exactly how they do. But it feels like it. Like, if I told you it was a Star Trek convention and just showed you pictures of the Galaxy Con, you'd be like, oh, yeah, sure. To the naked eye. And if someone be like, I don't know what character they're supposed to be. But to the naked eye, it feels like Star Trek.
It's like Joe O's. It's the Trader Joe's Cheerios. It's like, oh, yeah. I recognize this.
Yes.
Wouldn't hold up in a trade dress lawsuit.
I don't know. Yeah, but those are the main positives I have in the general category. And then I have, you know, a lot of scenes and some lines. And we could maybe even play some clips, AJ.
I think I have the ability to do that.
Why don't you give me a scene that you liked?
My first half is mostly quotes. So do you want me to jump around a bit, or do you want to start off with a very early scene?
Let's jump off with an early scene.
Okay, go ahead.
I love the first section where he gets picked up by the aliens, and he doesn't really know what's happening. He's totally hungover. And this is almost, I know you haven't seen BoJack Horseman, but they must have taken inspiration from this scene. He's got this really nice house overlooking everything. He's kind of rewatching old episodes of Galaxy Quest, relaying the lines, getting totally plastered. And then in the morning has this like shill gig where he goes to people's basements and he reenacts. He's the commander. So he goes there. He doesn't totally know. It's really good dramatic irony when he's up in the ship, because he's like hung over as shit. He doesn't know that they get transported. And he doesn't even know what's going on until he's transported back. And I really love that framing using this, because they could have done this a number of different ways, but I think that the way that they did it was really fun.
It's almost like that scene in Tropic Thunder where Tom Cruise is yelling at the people without realizing that they're like warlords.
Yeah.
when he's negotiating with Saris. Is that his name, right? Saris?
Yeah. Yeah, Saris.
He's like, yeah, just press the buttons and yeah, fuck this guy. Can I go now? I gotta be somewhere in a quarter of an hour. I thought that was so funny.
Yeah, I gotta go to, they're opening some, where does he say? He said like a city, Pasadena or something. Because this is in LA, yeah. the first part. The places on Earth are in LA.
Mm-hmm. I love, not to jump again to lines, but right, sure. When they're in the limo, when the scene I really like, the moment I liked is when she's like, what's wrong with her? Why isn't she talking? And she's like, her translator is broken. And then she just spits out a bunch of gibberish. I was like, yep, I see why Trevor likes this movie.
In the 5 million years following the great nebula burst, our people were one.
What's your name? Doesn't she talk?
Her translator is broken.
Okie dokie.
I love how weird that the aliens are. They make weird noises. Like, yeah. Mum's the word. Mum, 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 mum. All just super weird. I actually wonder if this movie would be better if you didn't know the premise. Like, you get the same surprise when he gets transported. You're like, wait, what? Or you don't know where this movie's going. I'd be curious to show this movie to someone who doesn't know that this is a science fiction movie, and if they think it's just a realistic movie about, like, old sitcom or old science fiction actors. That'd be cool.
Oh, I have a scene.
Go, go, go.
It's when they land, when he gets back and goes to the convention or the opening or whatever it is, and he's, like, telling everybody about what happened, and no one believes him. I thought this was very funny, specifically the line, they were termites or Dalmatians. I'm not really sure because I was hungover, which is probably a good adult joke in there.
Yes.
But I always love it. Reminded me, not to make a Santa Claus connection on a second episode in a row here, but it reminded me a lot of him, like, oh, Judy, Judy and the waitress at the Denny's. And just
absolutely. It did feel a little Santa Claus-y there.
No, but this was a fun scene. I will say, like, from a nitpicky standpoint, he goes, I think it all happens, again, here I am praising the speed and efficiency with which this movie moves, but it's also like the fact that he doesn't realize what's happening because he's hungover, but then everything kind of comes to him in a way where he has total clarity on everything. Just a little gripe, I would say, there. But, you know, they can't all be winners.
They can't all be winners. Did you like the scene where they are doing the jobs on the ship for the first time? And then she is repeating lines from the computer.
She's like, that's my only job. I don't know what else I'm supposed to do.
I have one job on this ship, and I'm going to do it.
Was she cast because of Alien?
I'm not sure, actually. I'm not sure exactly the whole casting story on this, but she's perfectly casted. And I know that there probably was some, like, sexist interviews and weird stuff, especially in sci-fi movies. People have, like, weird fetishes for female actresses in sci-fi. I know Carrie Fisher got a lot of weirdos and stuff like that. You know, Star Wars, obviously. But I liked how she was saying, like, the interviews, they spent 30 minutes asking me about my boobs.
Oh, yeah. Six paragraphs on that was
six paragraphs on my boobs.
I wrote that down somewhere. I can't remember it, but
something like that.
Oh yeah. Although to be fair, and I know I'm jumping around a little bit in this, but I thought that line was funny. But it reminded me of here I am doing a Family Guy and a South Park reference. But it's like when South Park makes fun of Family Guy, they make fun of the fact where it's like, you think that's bad. Remember that time and it just the cutaway and just it reminded me a lot of you think that's bad. Remember that time I had a TV guide interview me about my boobs? And I'm like, okay, it's a little expository in the opening scene. But yeah, sure, it's funny.
I'm glad at least you did that, because I thought you were going to say, yeah, but, you know, to be fair, I did like her boobs or something. That's where you're going with that. I'm like, what the hell? Shut up. Again, it's kind of a parody, but not parody. Mm. And when you have an issue with that line, a little bit. Like, it's a little too expository. I feel like that's how people talk on TV, and that's how they kind of talk on shows, because if you weren't there for the last few episodes or you didn't see that episode, you're supposed to be able to jump in whenever. They produce TV so that you can jump in whenever and you can kind of catch up. So
why are you doing this again? I told you I'm doing it because of that thing that we talked about in the last episode. Oh, you're still doing that thing? Yes, I'm still doing that thing.
And it's not even that. They'll do that within the episode. So if you didn't catch the first 5 minutes, you can still catch up.
Yeah.
It's infuriating. And that's why I couldn't really always get behind sitcoms, because it was like too much like that.
Yeah.
Like primetime TV. Streaming shows get away from that. They don't have to do that. You know, it's kind of nice.
So you're saying you do like The Big Bang Theory?
No, I don't. What? No, it's the opposite of what I just said.
So speaking of sitcoms, one of the scenes that I liked a lot was when the Galaxy Quest crew had to tell them about the deception and lies. And it's like, you didn't really think these historical documents were real. Like, did you honestly think that Gilligan's Island? Everybody just goes, oh, those poor people.
Yeah,
that was so funny.
Didn't you make any TV shows on your planet? Any theater, films?
The historical documents of your culture. Yes. In fact, we have begun to document our history from your example.
No, not historical documents. They're not all historical documents. I mean, surely you don't think that Gilligan's Island is a...
Those poor people.
Oh, brother.
He doesn't understand.
Explain it to him like he's fine.
But then at the end of the movie, it is kind of funny how they still don't really get it. And like, oh, you were decepting us then. The historical documents are true. Or maybe he does understand it. And I don't know. It's kind of sweet what happens. If I could back up a little bit, I really like I think probably one of the stronger scenes in the movie is that little side mission on the planet. Where that would be probably like almost an entire episode as they go to a planet to get something. Like the beginning of an episode, they're escaping something. Oh, no, now we need this thing to get on with our next mission or something. And then they go on a planet to recover a whatever boost. And then they get it. So I really like that little bottle segment in the movie where they're on this planet. They see a bunch of weird green ghoul aliens. They're like ghoulies. And then there's the rock monster. They have a lot of great lines back and forth, and I think this starts to show a little bit of Jason Nesmith's arc. The line I really like from this, my favorite line from this, is he's like, you just have to think, what is its motivation? It's like, he doesn't have
it's a
motivation.
Rock, yeah.
It's like, you were never serious about the craft.
I liked the scene, but I think I'm a little bit lower on it than you are, and one of the reasons why is because the effects are just not good. You know, it's... It came out the same year as The Matrix. You can't hold it up to The Matrix because The Matrix is the fucking Matrix. But it was just even the little goofy dudes who ate their person. I was a little okay. The effects aren't great here, but I mean that's just my genuine only knock about it. In that, again, for better and worse, it did feel like the stereotypical side quest of like, oh, okay, here's the little planet side quest thing. I didn't hate it, but I think it was one of the lower scenes I was on the movie.
Ah, okay. I just thought it was a fun moment. Obviously the effects don't really hold up, but I think it works for the tone of the movie because everything else looks kind of campy, and that's why it holds up, because you're watching something that feels like it's from this time period, but the script, the story, the arcs still kind of feel relevant.
Where do you think they filmed that? I'm gonna see which desert. I'm always fascinated
Nevada.
With the deserts where they I really want to go to Wadi Rum in Jordan. It's where they filmed Dune, and there was a scene in Rise of Skywalker. You know the scene where they pretended like they killed what's his name?
Yes, yeah.
That was Wadi Rum. Kind of want to go there. Filming locations. This is excellent. Oh, it's Utah. Goblin Valley State Park.
Oh, okay. I was close.
You were we went to both of those. We went to both of those states in the same day, Trevor, on the road trip.
Hell yeah.
Good times.
What else?
But at the end of that scene, I did like when they beamed up the animal, and it only works if it's, you know, a human or Tim Allen's character's very specific dimensions or whatever.
Yes.
And he gets beamed up on the outside, and everyone's like, oh, and he's like, what's wrong? No, nothing, nothing. And then one of the guys in the background's like, it's hideous. And just the back and forth there, I thought worked very well. That was a funny moment.
Sigourney Weaver's character just kept going like, please hold. Hold on, or hold, please. One. Oh, that reminds me of another great moment. This is the first time all the crew is there, and Tim Allen's like, let's hope he's as dumb as he is ugly. Like, if we do this thing, he's trying to come up with a plan, and the video's on. I know it's kind of an old gag.
That was a little too cutesy for me.
It was still kind of fun. I liked it. Because I agree, it's cutesy, but for some reason, it really worked here.
I'm glad it brought you joy. I was like, this is funny, but like, I didn't dislike it, but I was like, I know where this is going.
Any other big scenes you want to call out?
You know, and here I am talking about how much I dislike cliches. Mm-hmm. I knew exactly where this was going, but I loved the fake out with the whole, oh, you're acting just like you were in episode 17. He's like, oh, episode 17. And then they do the fake fight. I thought that was funny. And of course it ends with the guys getting shot out of the air fryer, whatever the fuck it's called. But I thought that was a funny scene.
It just brings a smile to your face. You're just smiling watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they're doing the thing. They're doing the bit. They're pretending to fight. You know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that it's a bit that they would do, like a stupid plan that works in a stupid TV show or like a silly TV show. And you're like, oh, they're doing a bit that works. That's kind of cute. Because even if you don't watch Star Trek, you know of some kind of show or old movie that they've tried that and it's worked and it's funny.
Right. I like that. But these two characters needed that bit. They needed the reference point. And Tim Allen tipped off Alan Rickman and Kirk tipped off Spock. And it's like, okay, we know what we're doing here. And I liked that because they, like you said, they kind of clued in the audience through, in indirect words, what was happening. Oh, I thought it was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Another bit. What did you think of the climax where they're trying to go to get the Omega 13 and they have to call Justin Long's character? And they're like, how do we get down here? And they're calling them while also the rest of the crew is doing some other stuff.
I thought this was fun. I will never say no to Justin Long. So I thought that was fun to see him in a movie. Oh, but he got a Saturn Award nomination for it, too. But yeah, it was
really?
Fun. Yeah. I think the highlight of this scene, and I hope you feel the same way, is Gwen's reactions with the Crushers. You know, why is this here? This episode was so badly written. Whoever wrote this episode should die.
Because
you don't need to know Star Trek to think that that's really, really fucking funny.
What is this thing? I mean, there's no useful purpose for there to be a bunch of choppy, crushy things in the middle of a hallway. No, I mean, we shouldn't have to do this. It makes no logical sense. Why is this here?
Because it's on the television show.
Forget it! I'm not doing it! This episode was badly written!
Yeah, she's calling out something that definitely would happen, but it's also, like, ridiculous. Why would you have a trap in your own damn ship?
Yeah, it goes to show how good of an actress Sigourney Weaver is. Yep. It shows her range. She's very funny in this.
Absolutely. So I wrote that line down, too. I think that was very funny and really appropriate. What else do you have here for this line? Is that all you had for this? Do you have no more scenes and lines and stuff? I'm just trying to gauge what we have.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. The only thing I just want to call out after the climax, which I really loved using the Omega 13, because the whole time it's kind of this MacGuffin, and I like that we actually get to see what it does. It's not just mysterious machine that they're trying to do the whole time. We actually get to see what it does, which is fun. It's nice. And they actually get to use it, which it's kind of a fun... It's kind of a fun idea, you know?
I don't mean to be so nitpicky in this episode, but
it's okay,
here I am.
You can nitpick.
It's so clearly, like, they needed a MacGuffin for the movie to get them up there, and it's just like, we need you to tell us where this weapon is, and then it would be just colossally stupid in their minds to not have shown what the weapon does. Unless they want to be like, oh, it's a laser that can blow up a planet. Like, they needed to do something a little bit out of the box with this Omega 13. And then, yeah, of course, they explain what it is, and it's the 13-second rule. You go back in time 13 seconds, and then they need an excuse to use it at the end. So they have the fake out with, you know, Monk being a bad guy in disguise and changing it back. And I was in slow-mo. You knew exactly how it was going to go. It was just like, at that point, I was like, I really do not need this. It wasn't a terrible part, but I was like, okay, this is so clearly like screenwriting 101, introduce the thing, then show it in use and save the day at the end.
Yes, again, this is 100% screenwriting 101 script. But you
but
know
it was
why this is
formulaic, I think, in this one. Like, to a fault, formulaic.
Okay, I disagree there. I kind of liked it. And I think why it works is this kind of very, very specifically structured script works because, again, it's referencing a time in TV where everything had to be 100% perfect. You needed page 3, this to happen. Page 6, this to happen. Page 12, this to happen. It has to be exactly perfect. Everything is structured. Every episode follows the same format, the same structure, because you, again, you have to hit your mark. You have to hit the commercials. You have to hit all these things. So I liked that this was following that because of, I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I honestly was kind of checked out. I was like, all right, slow-mo, and yeah, this is the thing, yeah, and... You know, I was watching it with my roommate, and of course, when they're going over the they're looking up at it. Tim Allen is Sigourney Weaver's character. They're looking up at it, and like, oh, is that it? It's like, yeah, I guess what it's supposed to do is go back 13 seconds. And Parker's like, oh, I wonder if that's going to come back later into the movie. And I was like, all right, yeah. So,
oh, you were watching it with him?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fun. Do you think this movie ends too happily, like too satisfying?
I'm a sucker for a happy ending, and I don't think it was unearned. I don't think it was unexpected. I don't think it was, like, overtly satisfying. I thought it was just, like, perfectly happy ending. You know, they land. Everyone's cheering for them. They get the fan love, the save the world love. Everything works out. I didn't have any issues with it.
Okay.
And then they have their new show, and, yeah, it was fine.
Because I know it's, like, okay, this is, like, everything. It's the happiest it could possibly end. It's like really, really happy, really positive. But I liked it because, again, this movie is a people pleaser, or this movie is a crowd pleaser. This movie is made to kind of just have a good time and cheer, right? You're just, I don't know, you're having a great time with this movie. So I think it's fitting that you would have a good time at the end of it. You know what I mean?
I have no disagreements.
Okay.
Shall we move on?
Yeah, let's move on. To things that don't really hold up.
I feel like I've gotten a lot of my big ones out of the way. I felt like that opening scene with the first cast was a little too expository. I mentioned that, I, you know, for better or worse, there are some subtleties here I think you'd really only get if you were a Trekkie, like references, character dynamics, talked about the effects, talked about the 13-second thing. What did you have that we haven't brought up? Nothing, because it's a perfect movie?
No, there was one part where Saris was asking what the Omega 13 does. It's like, is it a bomb? Is it a weapon? Is it a booby trap? And I just think the word booby trap was a little too silly for his character, especially for the tone of that scene. So that was like a little nitpick, I think, there.
That's it? That's all you got?
No.
The word booby trap is your big...
No. I think some of the aliens as humans look too similar. Like, it was kind of hard to discern who it was, like who's who. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So yeah, that was one for sure.
You're stretching, man. You're stretching.
I know I'm stretching. All right, I don't really have any scenes. Like, I no, just before you go, I don't really have any scenes that I'm like, this scene did not work for me, or this character did not work for me. Because I think this really is, everything is working together. I'll probably agree if you bring up some stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. But I kind of had these like blinders on, like when something's happening, I'm like, yeah, no, I have nothing wrong with this.
Been there, don't yeah, no shame there. Let me see what you think about this one. I know you're going to disagree, and I feel like a lot of people disagree with me on this one. Mathazar, I think, is his name. Enrico Colantoni. I know he's being satirical, but the voice is just not my cup of tea. He definitely made me laugh a couple of times, but overall, I was not enjoying watching him. He's great
Mathazar,
in Veronica Mars.
The main guy?
Yeah, he's great in Veronica Mars.
Wow.
I know, hot take, but it was just the, yes, hello, and like, okay, yeah, I see what's going on. But I know that was the purpose of his character, and again, a couple times when he made some funny noises or just did something that was funny, I did laugh, but as a whole, he was, I didn't really love the scenes that he was a part of. And that's my hot take for the day.
All right. What other negatives do you have? I don't really have any other ones. So
that's it. Honestly, I wove a lot of them into the previous section. This is a pretty good movie, Trevor. Really, I can't say no notes, but very few notes.
And it doesn't have to be just because there's not a lot of negatives doesn't mean it's the best movie. It doesn't mean it's flawless. It just means that there's not a lot of issues I had. I don't know what to add here, but there probably is some things that could have been better.
Yeah. It also means I was just like, it was my first time watching it and I was really into it. And unless something was really good or really bad, I wasn't stopping to take notes because I was enjoying the watch and I was into it.
Yeah. I'm glad you were.
Best adult joke. The only one I had this as like joke because it was really quiet. And Mathazar says something about he has captured our females for his own demented purposes, which those weird bugs, I don't know how they do what they do, but that was like whispered. And I think I had to watch it with subtitles. It's also not a joke, but it's just something that is an adult reference that is in a kid's movie. And I don't know. I felt like I wanted to call it out there.
I guess this is some kind of negative, but more so an adult joke. I don't really know, but Tony Shalhoub's character is just like basically baked the whole movie. It feels like.
Oh, is he really?
Well, it feels like it. He acts so weird the entire time. Like he just feels like he's high the entire movie, the way he acts. And I think if I had to pick any kind of nitpick on a character, it's probably his, because I didn't exactly understand. I'm like, I think he's just high this whole time. I don't exactly know. So definitely what I would say.
See, for me, I think it actually would have been Sam Rockwell's character. And you know me, I love Sam Rockwell. I don't think he brought that much to it.
Well, I mean, I think Tony Shalhoub brought something. I just didn't understand like what he was going for, the direction of that character. I like Sam Rockwell's character because there are so many little minor characters that just die on episodes. So I think it's fun to bring him in and add them to the movie. But again, if you rewatch this movie, just pay attention when the scene's happening. Just watch Sam Rockwell in the background. It's really entertaining.
He's being like Incrediboy.
You're saying Incrediboy?
Incrediboy. You're not affiliated with me. Do you have any drinking game?
Anytime they say kind of a line from the show or something that's like from the show, do something or say something from the show. Yeah, which isn't perfect because we don't know exactly what the show is, but like Never Give Up, Never Surrender, the by Thyrgar's hammer or whatever, I will avenge you, take a line, the computer thing.
Justin Long being like, you know, in episode 9, or so, every time they reference anything to do with the production of the Galaxy Quest television
show. That's a good one. Every time they reference, the other thing is, anytime you think of William Shatner. Apparently, I don't know if you know, this was a pretty common theory or even just confirmed, is that moment in the beginning where he's in the bathroom. Jason Nesmith's in the bathroom and he overhears those people that went to the convention that aren't really fans of the show, but they're going there to make fun of people. And they're saying, man, what a loser fest. All these people just signing autographs. Everyone hates him, especially everyone hates that Nesmith guy. What a loser. Apparently that's like based on a true story from William Shatner at a convention.
Aw.
He like overheard some people. We don't have to feel too bad for William Shatner.
It reminds me a little bit of the scene in Scream where Sydney has like those two cheerleader girls making fun of her.
I don't know.
You are pathetic.
Oh. It's a little, I think maybe that line's even a little too on the nose. Like, I get it.
Let's see what else. Member berries. I didn't really have any, but I just threw baby Justin Long and also Rainn Wilson because I was like, holy fucking shit, Rainn Wilson's in this movie?
First movie?
Justin Long is in this movie?
It's Rainn Wilson's also first movie, so.
Yeah, I think I wrote down Missy Pyle. I was not expecting to see Missy Pyle in this movie. Crazy, man.
Is this member berries for cast?
Yeah, I didn't really have any other member berries because I'm not a Trekkie, but.
Did you ever go to a Comic Con or anything like that? You went to that thing where you met Josh Peck?
That was not a Comic Con. That was like a media convention for college journalists and like media guys. And so he just happened to be there promoting his new movie. But there, I really wanted to go. There was a London Comic Con when I was starting around London. But that weekend, I had another trip to another country that I already booked. And so a couple of the people I was living with while I was there went to Comic Con, but I didn't get to go to London Comic Con because of that other trip.
Ah, okay.
It's too big nowadays. Like, I mean, I would love, especially in like the 2012-2013 time, like, I would love to go to like Hall H and SDCC and something crazy like that and go see like when The Hunger Games was in its prime, or when Game of Thrones was in its prime, or when even like when Stranger Things 2 trailer dropped. Like, I don't even know if they're still doing it to its full capacity, but at this point, like, what are the big active franchises aside from, like, you know, I'm sure Stranger Things will be there this year, and I bet something Marvel-y will be there this year. But, like, what are the other big Hall H things that are going to happen?
I mean, I don't know. I think something
the House of the Dragon.
Are big, like, brands like Star Wars, Harry Potter, Marvel, are those things, are people not interested in them anymore?
I definitely lost
some interest in them, right? Like, I don't care that much.
I think there are people who are into it, but I think at this point in media consumption and pop culture, everyone's got their own niche thing. And so, you know, will there ever be another Hunger Games? Will there ever be another, event, even Avengers Infinity War? Like, what
you talk about Hunger Games like it was the biggest thing in the world. I would not put it on the same level as Star Wars, Harry Potter, or Marvel.
There was a moment in time where it was the number one thing in the world. So keep in mind, Catching Fire was the highest grossing American film in 2013. It beat out Frozen. So, like,
we
talked about this. It's a fucking big deal. Twilight, like, I'm not a Twilight person. Like, Twilight could have filled up 8 Hall H's. You know what I mean? Like, there was a time for this thing, and it's sad that everyone's got their own niche thing. It's cool that everyone found something that's relatable and enjoyable to them, but there's no big sweeping thing. And I guess we're even going back a ways where now you've got these micro conventions. Like, you would have specifically a Star Trek convention that people would go to. And they still have. They have, like, 90s Con now. You know what I mean? They've got they still do Boston Comic Con, but they've got
these nostalgia cons and nostalgia
exactly
fests too,
things like that. So they've got like these mini hyper focused Comic Cons because Comic Con blew up and now no one gives a shit about the MCU.
Because I went to not like Comic Cons and stuff recently, but I go to like board game conventions and stuff. And like I went to this. It sounds very nerdy. It was Orc Con. It's a very very small board game convention in LA. I went for a day. And it was pretty good. I got to test some very, very indie games. We actually bought a couple of games, but one of them actually that we bought there at this small thing, we play all the time and we introduce everyone to because it's something you could fit in your pocket or at least a small bag and bring it out in a brewery. It's like Crazy Eights, but style game, but with like weird stuff. It's called Crabs in a Bucket. So, hey, if you're looking for a nice game to bring to a brewery or a picnic or a beach or something, Crabs in a Bucket is a fantastic little independent game that you too can enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, you got PAX. I know you go into PAX a lot. Yeah, I've got another friend who goes to PAX. And so, like, I think I kind of missed the moment. I'm sure at some point I would like to end up at one. But you know me, Trevor, I don't like the whole cosplaying thing. I don't like a ton of crowds. I don't like lines. I don't like spending that much money on things like that. Like, I mean, maybe if there's a Boston Comic Con sometime, there will be, I'll go. But I don't know. It's just never been the top of my list, but it's on like my B tier bucket list.
Gotcha. I mean, you don't have to. I don't know. You know what? It's just like that's the closest thing I can compare to.
Anything else you want to say about, like, I mean, do you want to talk about making this in 2024? Do you want to talk about Best Friend, or do you want to wrap this boy up?
The only other thing I have to say is I saw that they might be like doing some kind of TV show on Paramount Plus. I don't really know what it is, and I couldn't find much else aside from that. But yeah, what would this look like? I don't even know what this would look like as a remake, because you would kind of have to get this style of cast, and they made this at the perfect time. They did in 99. This cast, what they're parodying is the old original series and the Next Generation. It was like exactly that time period. So I think if you make something like this, I could see a sequel, but who would really like it? Because I just don't think there is that much of a target audience or a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like to see things be a little bit sillier. I would like to see more movies that lean into showing love to franchises and everything like that. And I think, mm-hmm. like, I'm trying to think of something similar where this is, so this is a good Star Trek movie and also a good movie about Star Trek. Would you agree?
Sure. Probably. Yeah.
There are movies that are like, if it was a movie that is a good true crime movie, but it's also making fun of like true crime. Okay, here's a good example. Hot Fuzz. Not only is it a good buddy cop movie, it's a great movie about buddy cops. Like right. buddy cop movies. Something like that. I want more movies that are parodying a genre while also being excellent examples of that genre.
Mm-hmm.
Give me more of that. I found what I was looking for. It was at the tip of my tongue. I'm like, what am I thinking of? There's another Shaun one that Dead, I always even. Use. Shaun of the Dead. Basically more Edgar Wright movies. I'd love to see a sci-fi Edgar Wright movie that's not World's End. Like, that was good. I liked it, but a different one.
I see what you mean.
I would like to see his take on a superhero movie.
Did he do Ant-Man, or am I making that
up? He was going to, then got fired.
Ooh, yeah. Oh. Maybe Driver's kind of a superhero movie.
Kind of. This is more of a heist movie.
Yeah, but he's superhuman. He's got his power-ups, his girl that he's got to save, the bad guys. It's kind of.
What else do we want to do here?
Let's wrap it up. Do you have a nifty, fun little question for us?
Well, AJ, is Galaxy Quest renewed? Did they renew it again for another season, The Next Generation, or did it get canceled?
Well, technically, it wasn't renewed. It was canceled because they didn't make another movie. But in my mind, this is renewed. I thought that this was a great first watch, a great 90s movie that I missed, and I'm bummed that I did. And if you have made it all the way through this episode and have never seen Galaxy Quest, give this movie a watch. It's on Tubi. It was one of the most frustrating streaming experiences of my life.
Pluto TV.
That's it. Pluto, and I had to keep like refreshing it, and it was just so fucking frustrating. But it was worth it because this movie was a lot of fun, and yes, I really had a good time with this one. So I will be recommending Galaxy Quest to everybody who likes 90s movies, sci-fi movies, comedies, adventures. It was just a great movie in a lot of different aspects. Well cast, well written, a good movie. I'm very entertained. I was very entertained.
It's really funny you say that because I was also trying to watch this on Tubi, and I immediately stopped watching it and just rented it. I said, I think when I saw Begin Again, the John Carney movie on Tubi, mm-hmm. or sorry, Pluto TV, I had this the worst experience of my life watching a movie. So I kind of vowed to like really never again use Pluto TV. It's such a miserable experience. Like, yeah. I just absolutely hate it. So I rented it. It's $4 or whatever to rent. Like, I don't know. It's not that bad. It's just a few bucks or whatever. Just rent it. Back to the recommendation. I 100% recommend this movie. It's becoming one of my favorite movies, maybe even in my top 10. I don't know. It's hard to put it that high because I didn't really grow up with it, I really love it. I think it's a really, really fantastic movie. It hits a lot of boxes that I like in movies. And like AJ, if you haven't seen it before, I think you'd like it even now for its 25th anniversary. So I don't recommend watching this on Pluto TV, but if you have a few bucks to spare, I do recommend renting it. Maybe see if your library has it, your local library. A reminder that your library has plenty of films that you can watch. For free.
Yeah, but you're making the assumption that people have physical media players, which is a big assumption in 2024.
Is it that much of an assumption?
Do you know the amount of people I know that just simply do not have physical media players? They don't have a Blu-ray player. They don't have a DVD player. They don't have a gaming console that has discs. There's That's no ridiculous. Way for them. They'll rent it or they'll stream it.
Some people, you can rent, I think, a lot of players from some places.
I should hope so. But yeah, again, pre-COVID, like 2018, 2019, some of my friends and coworkers were like, yeah, I don't have a Blu-ray player or a DVD player. I'm like, how do you watch your hundreds of movies? They're like, we don't have hundreds of movies. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm the weird one. That sucks.
That's just crazy.
Well, Trevor, I have a movie that I have picked out for our watching for 2 weeks from now.
Okay.
It is another anniversary movie. And I know we just recently did a movie about a group of friends getting together to save one of the dads in their group, but I want to watch this movie. It's been a while, and you know, the other movie I want to do for an anniversary, I think it would be more of a summer movie. So let's do this one, and let's get some go-karts, and let's rob a bank.
I'm very excited, because guess what, AJ?
You've never seen this?
I've never seen it, but I have a story why.
I'm looking forward to hearing that story. I'm looking forward to watching this movie for the first time in a while, and I think that's pretty much it. But before we go, of course, we have to give an extra special shout-out to all of our upper-level patrons who continue to support the show at their upper-level tier, and for doing so, they get a bonus episode on Patreon every single month. Whenever we get to it, which has, again, been a pretty good streak these past couple of months, we've gotten early episode releases to everybody on Patreon. They get shout-outs in our show notes, and they get shout-outs in the episode. So to Emil, Ben Franke, Ray Munoz, Steven Schinder, and Trevor Sprouse, thank you guys so much for being patrons of the Old Kids Movies. In all seriousness, we really, really, really appreciate what you have done for our show, and we hope that if you're considering that, you will join our Patreon. And if you don't want to join our Patreon, let us know. Let us know what we can do to, you know, get you to sign up on over there. So yes, that's going to be it. Any parting words from you, Trevor?
No, just thanks again for sticking with us, listening to all our movies. Please keep interacting with us. We like to do it because I don't know, it's fun, but also it's fun to know that some people like listening, and people can also share the same type of movies that we share, which is a weird genre for, you know, people of our age to like.
Yeah, we hope that you guys are having some fun with it, and we will see you in 2 weeks for a brand new episode. Let me rephrase that, actually. You can catch us in 2 weeks for a brand new episode right here on the Old Kids Movies. Thanks for listening.